91.3 WLRN presents Topical Currents. Today we begin with a behind-the-scenes look at the U.S. Customs and Border Protection at Miami International Airport. Well, at least to some extent. Good afternoon, it's Bonnie Berman. Joseph Cooper returns on Monday. We visit with their public affairs officer, Migdalia Arteaga, in moments. And more, Linda Gassenheimer takes on the blue sky and sand cuisine of Jamaica with one of its most noted practitioners, acclaimed chef Cindy Hudson of Portinique on the Mile. Fred Tasker, of course, weighs in with his wine suggestions. Stand by, Topical Currents, up next after NPR and regional news. And welcome back to Thursday's Topical Currents. I'm Bonnie Berman. Joseph Cooper returns on Monday. Even before the game-changing tragedy of 9/11, going through air or seaport customs exuded tedium for most travelers. Probably 99% of passengers are in compliance, of course. But there are those who may threaten our safety, our borders, or agriculture. We're joined now by U.S. Customs and Border Protection Chief Public Affairs Officer Migdalia Arteaga. We'll learn more about what goes on behind the inspections and enforcement procedures, and we welcome you to Topical Currents, Migdalia.
Thank you, Bonnie.
Great to see you. So I thought I understood what you did, but now that I've spoken to you, I don't. So let's
sorry.
No, it's so extensive. It was my understanding you oversaw procedures and processes at MIA, Miami International Airport, as well as the Port of Miami. But now I understand that it's the field office. You're in the Miami Field Office of Operations.
Correct.
Which oversees the entire Eastern Seaboard?
Florida.
Okay.
We service Florida.
Okay. So what do you do?
Basically the phase for Customs and Border Protection here in Florida. So I handle most of media inquiries. I seek out actually exposure for my agency so that people can know what we do.
And here we are.
Thank you for having me again.
It's our pleasure. How did you come to hold this position?
I started actually at the Seaport in 2001 and then applied for a position at the field office. In 2006, I became a program manager. And our chief public affairs officer was going to work at another port, and the director asked me to step in for her.
So since 2006, you've been doing this?
Actually, since 2008.
Okay. And how many departments and employees do you oversee?
Well, I service all seaports and airports in Florida.
Okay. And who coordinates all these different departments?
We have other public affairs liaisons throughout the state of Florida that actually help me coordinate, too.
So is Customs and Border Protection in the Department of Homeland Security? Are they a
Correct.
Part of it?
The Department of Homeland Security will be like our mother.
Okay.
Yes.
And Immigration and Customs Enforcement?
They'll be like our cousins.
Okay, I'm just trying to...
Yes, I'm trying to make it as simple to understand.
Okay.
Because I know it's very complicated.
And and TSA, where do they come in?
It's another cousin.
It's a cousin.
Yes, we're all under Homeland Security.
Okay. So what do you look for when somebody's... like I noticed on this card you gave me... that you've arrested 21 wanted criminals, you've apprehended, identified 548 individuals with suspected national security concerns. How do you identify these people?
Well, that's in a given day. That's what happens in our agency, right? We can receive extensive training, and the training never stops. We go to an academy for 3 months. Some of us go to an academy for 4.5 months. But then after we come back, there's 2 years of post-academy and probation. And then after that is course after course. We're always taking classes.
So you're always having to
get
online, continuing education.
Correct.
So I didn't know this. You oversee every piece of mail that comes into MIA?
That comes into the United States. We are responsible as an agency, Customs and Border Protection, for all the mail that enters into the United States.
Okay, so before it ever goes to the post office.
It goes to the post office and they give it to us.
Oh.
And then we inspect it and give it back to them.
And what do you look for? I mean, do you look for drugs? Do you look for anthrax?
Everything. We look for all of that. Drugs, counterfeit documents that are being sent from through the mail from another country.
How can you recognize those?
Experience, training, technology, canine. We use many, many systems and processes in trying to inspect the mail that comes in.
Huh. Can you explain what kind of technology you use, or you're not?
Yes, we use x-rays, for example. We're able to tell the difference between a substance to another. For example, cocaine and coffee will reflect at different densities within a can, if that's how it's coming.
Okay.
And we're able to detect it, and then we go and open that can. So technology has really facilitated us from the tediousness of having to open every can. We cannot open every can. But if we put it through x-rays, we can observe what's inside and determine, yes, we should open it or not.
If you have questions that you probably won't get answered by Nidalia Arteaga, you can call us. Our lines are open. Our number is 1-800-743-9576. 1-800-743-9576. You can email us, radio@wlrn.org. radio@wlrn.org. So, okay, flower shipments, plants, all those things are inspected. We get a lot of flowers coming in from South America, yes. For example.
Yes.
What are the restrictions?
Well, again, between 85% to 95% of flowers that come into the United States come through our airport here in Miami.
Okay.
Especially for Valentine's Day or Mother's Day, those are our highest peak seasons. And so we need help from other ports that send their own officers to help us get through those seasons. But what they're looking for is extremely important for the agriculture here. Because, for example, they look for a pest. And if you get a pest into this country,
right,
that comes in and doesn't have a natural enemy, guess what? It's going to reproduce.
Comes an invasive species.
An invasive species. And it's going to end up destroying, you know, for example, citrus canker.
Right.
And things of that magnitude.
Was that something that came here?
I really don't know the story of citrus canker, but I know that it's one of the things that we try to avoid.
And what about, what's the most unusual thing you've ever found, let's say, in a flower shipment? Do people try to put drugs in flower shipments?
Absolutely.
Ah, okay.
Oh, yes. Like, they'll soak the petals of a rose in cocaine, liquid cocaine. Or they'll actually put cylinders with cocaine in the boxes of roses and stuff like that.
So it just seems like it would be an amazingly huge chore to have to go through every one of these boxes of flowers.
Absolutely.
And you say that, what percentage? 90% of all flowers come in. Are we like a real, are we Miami and Fort Lauderdale likely entry points for violations?
I would say because we are the gateway from the Americas.
Right.
We are exposed to more possibilities of that happening. I would say that, but we're also prepared to stop it. We recognize who our enemy is or what our problems could be. And so we prepare for it.
What are the contraband foods?
It goes by the season. For
okay.
example, and there, most of them are very benign. People who have gone through the country of origin and are coming back, and they want to bring a little piece of their country.
Like a little piece of cheese from France.
Or cheese or meat or things like that, very benign.
Okay, and those are not allowed?
Some of them are not allowed, that's correct. I mean, they may, even wood may carry parasites. Or,
right. So you use these dogs. Do you train them? Are they trained by your department?
They're trained by our department, yes.
And where do you get the dogs from?
We usually, shelters, they're usually donated to us. They're rescue dogs.
Rescue dogs.
Yes, yes.
Do you use any other animals other than dogs?
No, just the dogs. We use two kinds of dogs. Of course, we have dogs that can detect drugs,
right.
currency, The biologicals, like, yes.
Currency? Tell us about that.
Well, we also are in charge of controlling currency that comes in or gets out of the country. There's only a limit of $10,000 that you can bring in. If you have more than that, or if you're trying to wash money, launder money, by bringing it in your body, your suitcase, or other means, that's what the dogs look for.
How do the dogs sniff money?
They learn. They're taught. They're taught.
So say somebody's walking in with it strapped. I guess you see that on the machine, the X-ray machine?
Well, but we don't X-ray everybody.
Right.
That's TSA.
That's TSA. That's right. Okay.
What we do is that we usually rove. We walk around the airport on the areas where people are arriving. And these dogs will actually smell it on the person and detect it.
What do you do with the things, that the contraband that you find, say the drugs, the money, guns, let's say, arms?
Drugs and guns and things like that are destroyed.
Yes. Just destroyed?
Yeah.
And the money?
We usually give it to the Treasury Department to distribute.
To whom?
To the agency to distribute. We don't keep it. No, we don't keep it, no man.
Okay. All right. We're speaking with Migdalia Arteaga. She's the Chief Public Affairs Officer for the U.S. Customs and Border Protection in the Miami Field Office. If you have questions or comments, the number 1-800-743-9576, 1-800-743-WLRN. You can also email us radio@WLRN.org. We're going to take a short break and we'll be back with more. Welcome back to today's Topical Currents. Bonnie Berman speaking with Migdalia Arteaga. She's the Chief Public Affairs Officer for the U.S. Customs and Border Protection in the Miami Field Office, or the Miami Office of Field Operations. I just want to read a couple of numbers here on this card you gave me. On a typical day in 2014, Customs and Border Patrol processed 1,026,234 passengers and pedestrians.
That's correct, ma'am.
That's a lot.
That's a lot of people.
I also see that you conducted 1,333 apprehensions between the U.S. ports of entry.
Correct.
And discovered 425 pests at the U.S. ports of entry.
Yes, ma'am.
I mean, it goes on. 3.4 million dollars worth of products with intellectual property rights.
Correct.
Violations. Would you explain what that is, how they deal with, how they are also charged with protecting intellectual property?
Very important. That's one of our crucial missions.
Okay.
Explain that. Enforce here. For example, you have a phone, okay?
Okay.
And you have a fraudulent phone coming to the country from another country, a shipment of them.
A shipment of phones.
Correct.
Okay.
And they're imitating iPhone, Samsung, right, whatever brand it is. They flood the market with those fraudulent phones. And not only can they be a damage for the economy, but they can also be dangerous to people as well, because they don't have the quality that goods have been made by iPhone, Samsung, and all those brands have. It goes on and on. They can be even harmful to a person, because what if they explode, the battery leaks, or things like that. So we are often trained or work side by side with many companies that teach us how their products are and the way they're supposed to look, and then we look out for those when those shipments come into the country.
And what else other than the phones, for example?
Oh, you got the fancy ones like purses, for example. Uh-huh. They try to imitate Chanel or whatever.
Gucci, Prada.
Gucci, Coach, and stuff like that. But we're taught how to detect those and stop them from coming into the market.
How do you get along with all the other agencies, with your cousins and your parents, the Homeland Security, ICE, and TSA?
One couldn't do without the other.
Okay.
because we all have a role to play. For example, in the case of their relationship with the HSI ICE.
That's Homeland Security Investigation.
Correct.
Okay.
We're the gatekeepers. So when we arrest somebody at the border or we interdict drugs, we catch something, we will apprehend it, we'll conserve it, we'll take it, but then we'll turn it over for them to take the case to court, to conduct the investigation, and we couldn't be one without the other.
So there's never a conflict. Like, you know how sometimes when there's a case and the FBI gets involved and the local police force doesn't want the FBI, you don't have any of that?
Well, we don't, but because we communicate.
Okay.
We're in constant communication. I don't know how it works anywhere else, but here, we're, before we publish something, for example, we run it by the agencies that are involved in it.
Let's talk about immigration and passport issues.
Correct.
What do you look for there, and what happens to people who are missing paperwork, for example, or if you spot a fraudulent passport?
It depends. There's a difference between lacking certain documents and purposely having a fraudulent passport.
Right.
Okay.
Okay.
If you have a documentary deficiency, that's easily overcome. We can give you a waiver. There are other measures that we can take to help you actually come in. However, if you have a fraudulent passport, you're committing a crime. That is a crime. So we're taught to detect those fraudulent passports. Like, there's signs that passports have supposed to have different microprints. Different things that would tell us that passport is fraudulent.
If somebody, how many languages are you trained or do you have translators for at the airport and the seaport?
Each officer should know at least one more language than their own. And okay. We have officers that speak languages from everywhere, from Mandarin to Russian to, it's incredible. We also have services that if we, by any chance, don't have that language, an officer that speaks that language at the port,
right,
we will call this people and they will translate for us.
Okay, I'm thinking if somebody is missing paperwork,
mm-hmm,
and we need to communicate with them,
yes,
exactly,
we'll find somebody, yes.
So when you detain somebody that, mm-hmm, doesn't have the proper paperwork versus, mm-hmm, somebody who has fraudulent paperwork,
yes,
are they all detained in the same place?
No. Everything. We also separate families and children, minors, and things like that. We put them in different places. We wouldn't put them together.
Let's talk to Ray in Miami, who wants to know something about contraband. Hi, Ray. Welcome to Topical Currents.
Hi. How are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm very well. Thank you. I wanted to ask you two questions. One, Cuban cigars, will you be allowing those in? Was that a punitive measure, or was that a thing with, I don't know, bugs or whatever? And secondly, when one comes into a country, to the United States, they always ask you whether you've been on a farm. Is that because of the brucellosis, and is it particularly countries that you're singling out? I think Argentina has a really big problem with that. But if I came from Colombia, would I have a similar concern?
Yes, it's because of the mad cow disease, foot and mouth disease. And we have identified certain countries that are more prone to have it. And it's public knowledge that some countries have had infestations. And so, yes, we look for that. And we'll even go to the extent to wash your shoes if you have been in a farm with the shoes that you're wearing and things like that. With respect to your first question, could you repeat it, please?
Yes, the Cuban cigars, will you be allowing those in? You know, I was wondering whether that was sort of a punitive part of the embargo thing, or, was there an inspect that came in or something?
As an
like
agency,
this?
We don't decide, so it will depend on what the president decides to do, and we will enforce those laws.
Okay, do you see anything changing in the near future, or anything coming down? Any directive coming down? Any changes on that?
I wouldn't be able to guess that. But whatever it is, we'll enforce it.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for calling, Ray.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye. Again, we're speaking with Migdalia Arteaga. She's the Chief Public Affairs Officer for the U.S. Customs and Border Protection in the Miami Field Office. Our number, 1-800-743-9576. 1-800-743-9576. 743-9576. Migdalia, what happens if, let's say, there's weather, bad weather, either, you know, somewhere else here where tons of planes are delayed, or a bomb scare, or another security issue at the airport? What do you do with all those people that have delayed flights?
We don't do much within the airlines and have to actually stagger their flights and put them in order again. But we will always continue to do what we always do.
So if you are flooded with mm-hmm. people, that must be, though, a pretty sticky situation, no?
We're used to dealing with massive amounts of people. I mean, just at the Miami airport, you have 45,000 people arriving in a given day. So we will adjust. We'll move personnel from one place to another.
45,000 people a day?
In a given day, during the holidays, we can have 45,000 people arriving at MIA.
And from how many countries?
Everywhere. We're always in between L.A. and New York in the number of passengers that we get. Sometimes we're the number one and the highest number of passengers. Sometimes we're number two. We're always changing. But we're one of the busiest ports in the nation.
And what about, you told Polly, who produced this show, that you always have a plan B. Have you ever missed anything that was really big? Was there something that you missed that it came back out after later that was something you were aware
of? If we had, I wouldn't admit it right now. But I'm not aware of anything big that you would know if it was that big.
So what's the weirdest thing you've ever experienced yourself? The weirdest thing you've ever found, or the most difficult thing?
So many.
Tell us a couple of stories.
I think that the kookiest thing that I've ever seen was when I was working at MIA, and an officer told me, we hear a chicken on the floor, in the inspection floor. And I said, what? So we went to find out what it was. And it was this old lady that was coming from Latin America, and she had a chicken, and she didn't want to leave him behind. It was her pet. So she had fed him brandy. And he woke up during the inspection process on the floor.
You mean, so what happened to the chicken?
Well, we put him in quarantine and
see. Oh, and then she still got
make
him.
Sure that, make sure. I don't know what happened in the end.
Okay.
But that would be the correct procedure to take.
Okay. And and what other strange thing?
Let me see. Once I remember that I was in Miami Seaport. This is a little more serious, but it's very interesting as well. And I noticed that there was this lady traveling with a little boy. But there wasn't like a contact between them. So as I was inspecting the lady, I asked him, how do you like your mom? I said, did you have a good time with your mom? And he right out told me, that's not my mom.
And so was he being smuggled or
he
something?
He was being smuggled, yes.
Wow.
So that was, that wasn't at the seaport, that was at the airport.
So you have to watch for so many different things.
So many different things. I think the most important and significant thing that I've ever learned is how to tell when somebody's lying, for example. And I play that on my children too. But but it's really interesting to see how human nature comes out, no matter what, no matter how good you are. You know, so how easy it is to, not easy, but how common it is, our same reactions to when we're lying.
So you have to be a psychologist as well.
A psychologist. You have to be able to observe people very well. For example, I used to tell my children, why are you using grooming gestures when you're talking to me? I know you're lying then. Because
you can
trying,
tell.
Yes, but I'm not even the best one, let me tell you. I'm not even close to that. But I've seen officers being able to tell when somebody's lying or has swallowed drugs, or just by looking at them, they can tell.
Am I telling the truth?
I don't know. Your pupils are very large.
Edgar in Miami, what do you want to ask Ms. Migdalia?
Hi, I just wanted to ask, because there's a lot of good questions being asked, but where do we follow up as far as those that are not being addressed? Like, is there a website or something that we can just...
Yes, I want you to look at www.cbp.gov. And there's a wealth of information there. We have galleries with pictures as well. We can inform you there about your documentation requirements. You can learn more about different programs that we have, like Global Entry or, you know, our kiosk that can facilitate your travel and your trade information as well.
Okay, Edgar, it's www.cbpcustomsborderpatrol.gov. Okay?
Protection.
And protect. Oh, Customs Border Protection. Okay, you still there, Edgar? Okay. And we'll go along to David in Fort Lauderdale. And David, we're almost out of time. What do you want to ask Migdalia?
Good afternoon, ladies. Really quick question regarding, I'm in the skincare medical field, and we're seeing a lot of equipment that's being imported, either by individuals or by companies, that, you know, can really, that should be FDA regulated, like a class 3 device or class 2 device. And they're just coming through, like it's not a big deal. And these are units that are, you know, are alter the way the body or the skin or functions. Is there something like this that a special task force handles?
Okay, David, let's ask Migdalia because she's shaking her head.
David, I mean, we facilitate trade and travel, but we wouldn't be able to tell what kind of technology can do it, you know? That would be, like, rightly so, the FDA. But we just make sure that their papers are in correct form and things like that. We wouldn't be able to determine whether they're harmful or not.
Okay, thank you, David. We have to be going.
Thank you, David.
Thank you. We've been speaking with Migdalia Arteaga. She's the Chief Public Affairs Officer for the U.S. Customs and Border Protection in the Miami office of field operations. Again, that's www.cbp.gov. Migdalia, it's been a pleasure. Good luck to you, and thanks for all your services.
Thank you for having me.
It's been our pleasure. Food and Dining is next. And welcome back to today's Topical Currents. Bonnie Berman here. Joseph Cooper returns Monday. It's Thursday. It's time for Food and Dining with Linda Gassenheimer. And chef, author, syndicated columnist, and our friend Linda Gassenheimer. We have the aroma of something delicious in the studio, Jamaican delicacies, from one of the cuisine's best-known chefs and restaurant owners. Linda, how about iridescent white sand in the cobalt blue Caribbean?
Are we on our way? Let's go.
Let's go.
What are we doing here? Bonnie. So, Bonnie, you know, how do you become a famous chef? Is it through culinary school?
Is it?
Or maybe cooking by the side of your mom or your grandmother?
Is it a lot of luck sometimes?
I don't know. Our guest today is a very successful chef and a restaurant owner, and she didn't follow those paths.
Okay.
So she's Cindy Hudson, and she tells her story in her book, From the Tip of My Tongue, Stories and Recipes from One of Florida's Favorite Chefs. So let's welcome Cindy Hudson.
Hey, ladies. What's up?
Hey, Cindy Hudson.
What's up? What's up? What's up? The delicious food you brought. That's what's up.
You're making me want to go to the Caribbean.
Okay. We'll come with you as long as you cook.
All right.
Okay. And we'd love to hear from you, our listeners. Do you have any questions for Chef Cindy? Maybe you'd like some advice on how to succeed in a very competitive chef world, because she's done it. Give us a call. That's 800-743-9576, 800-743-WLRN.
And email is radio@WLRN.org.
Okay. And of course, joining us is our favorite wine guy, Fred Tasker. He's joining us by Skype. And you can read Fred's wine suggestions for my Dinner in Minutes columns in the Miami Herald, and also his wine column in the Saturday Herald. Fred Tasker, what are we drinking?
Well, I thought I'd talk about wine blends, some of which can have the moxie to go with Cindy's spicy cuisine.
Wow. Hi, Fred.
Hi, Cindy. Good to have you on the show.
Thank you.
Okay. Well, that's a lot of moxie. She's got wonderful flavors in her food. Okay, Cindy Hudson, congratulations, first of all, on your book. It's beautiful. The photographs are gorgeous in it.
Thank you. I have to thank Michael Passari for that. He did a fantastic job. Followed me all over the place with that darn camera.
Well, it shows. It's wonderful. And I think one of our people we know very well, Jen Koretnik, helped you.
Oh, my God. If it wasn't for Jen, I would have lost my whole mind. I came close to it. She turned me around many a time, wiped my tears from my cheeks, and said, you can do this book. We can get this done. I'll help.
Well, you know, this is, you're so honest right now, but your book is so honest. That's what I really loved about it. And for example, you talk about how you gobbled up caterpillars when you were learning to crawl, that your mother hated to cook. So how did you become this revered chef? And also, you've been called the Caribbean Queen.
Oh, my goodness, by who? Well, didn't somebody sing a song about that?
I'm not telling.
The honesty sometimes gets me in trouble. So those innocent stories of eating caterpillars turned out to climbing mountains in Jamaica later on. And, of course, my daughter Ashley yells at me for that all the time. And I said, I'm not running for president, Ashley. I'm writing a book.
Oh, about being so honest.
Yeah, she tells me to stop that.
Well, how did you go? I mean, I remember I met you. We won't say how many years ago, when you were brokering coffee, Jamaican coffee here.
Yep.
And suddenly you were opening a restaurant. So how did that happen?
I remember, because I had a gallery on Lincoln Road at the time.
That's right.
Part of the South Florida Art Center. And you had Norma's.
Yep, Norma's on the beach.
Norma's on the beach. And I used to come down there all the time. Sometimes I'd watch baseball with Delius.
Yep, he's a baseball fan.
Well, he was a baseball player. Right?
Yes, he was.
Let's tell everyone who Delius is.
Tell everyone.
Okay, Delius Shirley is my partner in business, crime, and life. And he kind of grabbed my hand and took me down this path of the culinary field that I'm now in. His mother was the famous, she was the Caribbean Queen. She was Norma Shirley. She had a lovely, well, many restaurants in the islands in Jamaica. And she taught him how to run restaurants, and he taught me how to, not to cook, how to do the same, I guess.
Yeah, her restaurants were quite famous in Jamaica. Mm-hmm. So you grew up in New Jersey.
I did.
And then you made your way to Jamaica. How did that happen?
Well, there was a few stops along the way. I went from Jersey to Miami at a young age, picked up fishing, got my captain's license, took people out on charters, which always brought me to different islands, Bahamas mostly, down the Keys. And so I kind of began falling into that island mode, soon come and having a good time.
Soon come.
All right. Okay. Well, you've brought some food. We talked about this food. It's wonderful. Tell us what we're eating here. Slurping away, but it's what we're doing.
Well, over there you have a Bahamian-style conch chowder with actual conch from the Bahamas. And Linda, for you, I didn't really burst that Scotch bonnet pepper that's in there, so you could tolerate the spice. I know you don't like it. But the flavors.
Well, I told everyone she's really honest, right?
Yes. See that?
I have to say, though, that Linda's getting better with spice. I think pretty soon we can do the habanero with her.
Yeah, she did taste a little in there, and she just did a little clearing of her throat, and then that was the end of it. I was so impressed.
Well, maybe we could try it next on April Fool's Day.
No,
Fred,
I wouldn't.
Fred, when you first started talking, I thought, oh, Fred's my friend, and now you just... It was a disaster at the end there.
No, he's just trying to get you to be a little more adventurous.
That's right. And you're doing very well.
Well, yeah. Thank you, everybody. Anyway, let's talk about this conch chowder. What are we eating?
So it is conch from the Bahamas, and it's delicious, and it's really sweet and clean, the conch itself. And there's a lot of it in there. A lot of times you eat chowders, and they kind of leave out the conch in fritters and in chowders, but this one's packed full of it.
That's an important point, because how many conch fritters have I had that's just filled with bread?
Yeah, a lot of them. A lot of them, and, you know, we pack ours really, they're dense with conch.
And this is a recipe from the book, From the Tip of My Tongue, your book.
Yes, there's a lot of Caribbean recipes, and I like to call my cuisine of the sun, because it encompasses a lot of ethnic background, not just the islands in the Caribbean.
So flavors from all over.
Yep.
Yeah, and pictures from all over. I just love those. Okay.
How long have you had Ortenique on the mile now?
We are in our 17th year, believe it or not. Ugh, that's like hard to think about.
That is hard to believe.
I know.
That is amazing in this very, very competitive restaurant world. So yeah. What do you think is the secret to your success?
The passion that's involved in it, the hard work. You know, Delius has had that passion of the restaurant life and what we do and our travel, and we meet so many people. It's wonderful. It's what we like to do.
So, and what's nice is that every time I go in, it's consistently good.
Well, thank you. That helps, huh?
That is a big plus.
Well, you know, it's
plus.
And that's not about just Delius and I. It's about the team that works with us. And that is what gives us the ability to expand as we're doing now.
Okay. So, but there's some more food here. And, of course, we can't leave out the fact that this food is one of my favorites. Bonnie's just gobbled it up.
Yes, I did. I may have another if that's okay.
Tell us what it is and why it's here.
Okay, that's a peanut butter popper. It's gluten-free. It's dark chocolate, toasted coconut, natural peanut butter, oats, chia, and flax. And in our new venture, Zest Market and Zest in the Southeast Financial Center downtown.
So you're opening up another, this is what, your sixth or seventh venue or something? What is
actually, this is probably about the 12th, but the one that's, you know, we've sold some of them in the past and moved on into other areas. And so this one's downtown, and this is amazing. The Southeast Financial Center sits right on 200 South Biscayne. And I want to, Zest Market, they're attached to one another, Zest Market and Zest. Zest Market is going to be the healthier side of grab and go. The market is going to be open from breakfast to afternoon, about 3:30, Monday through Friday.
And so that's going to have healthier kinds of food. You know, you told me about these, what are we calling them?
Poppers.
Peanut poppers. Okay, so... I didn't realize that not all oatmeal is gluten-free.
It is not all gluten-free. You have to be very careful, especially if you are celiac.
Well, I didn't know that.
Well, I have to tell you, Fred, I'm sorry you can't taste this, because it sounds like it's just healthy with chia seeds and flax and gluten-free, but it is so good.
Fred, I'm sorry, too.
Fred, yeah. What would you pair with that?
And she's going for her third one. And you leave some for me.
Second.
Oh, you know, I might even do a dessert wine with that if it's really spicy.
It doesn't have spice, but it has peanut butter flavor, and I'm just sitting
there
thinking.
Oh, peanut butter. Yeah. The nicest combination in the world is peanut butter and port.
Oh, nice.
Okay.
That would be good.
That really sounds wonderful. And the fact of that you have so many wonderful stories as well as the recipes in the book. Well, first I have to get to the recipe, because, you know, one of my favorite recipes of yours is the mesquite cocoa rubbed
yep.
Lamb?
It started out Jamaican Blue Mountain coffee and cocoa from Jamaica as well. Some mesquite, some orange zest, and I make a rub out of it for steaks. And I found out the most exciting thing that it really flavors up is wild salmon. If you put that on wild salmon, it's amazing. You don't even know you're eating a salmon. It's delicious.
Wow, that sounds wonderful. We're going to have to go to a break now. We'll take a short break here. I'm Linda Gassenheimer, and we're talking with Chef Cindy Hudson. We'll take a short break, and we'll be back with more. And we're back. I'm Linda Gassenheimer, and we're talking with Orteanique on the Mile chef Cindy Hudson. Her book is From the Tip of My Tongue, Stories and Recipes from One of Florida's Favorite Chefs. It's one of our favorite chefs, too. And you know what? You can meet Cindy tonight at the bookstore in the Grove. It's on Mary Street in Coconut Grove, and she's going to be there. And Cindy, I think you're giving a cooking demonstration?
A cooking demonstration of West Indian curried crab cake with papaya mango salsa. There will be a little tasting going around, maybe a little glass of wine with that, and then a book signing.
Whoa, people be running to the bookstore in the Grove. Come along. And she's also going to be taking part in the Miami Book Fair International on November 21st, which is, I think, the Saturday of the book fair. She'll be giving a cooking demonstration from 2 to 3. And on November 22nd, this Sunday, she's going to be giving a talk and reading from her book. And you have to know, wherever Cindy goes, food goes. So come and
for
see
sure,
her.
For sure. And then after that, in between all that, I'll be heading down to Negril, Jamaica, because Delius and I are doing the food and beverage at a new venue, the Cliff Hotel, and the Cliff Hotel. spa resort.
Wow. She doesn't sit still, this woman. Okay, now it's dinner in minutes time for those of you who don't have time to sit still as well. Today it's a pesto pasta with walnut and chickpea salad.
Mm.
And yeah, it's really good. Yeah.
Yummy.
You need really ripe red tomatoes and then basil, and you mix that all together. That makes the red sauce. And it has vibrant flavors because I don't cook the pesto. I just put it on the hot pasta, and it gets warmed in the hot pasta.
And you can make a lot of that and then freeze it and have it when you want it, right?
Okay, and in raw as well. You can do that.
Yeah.
All right. Good advice from Chef Cindy. Great. But the secret to this one is you cut the tomatoes in half, and you squeeze out the juice and the seeds, and you only use the flesh when you're putting it in the food processor. After you have the basil and the tomatoes, then you add some pine nuts, and it's done. But don't throw away that sauce from the tomatoes, because I put it into mayonnaise. I put it into a salad dressing that I use for the salad, so that makes a nice sauce. And actually, I also sometimes add it just to mayonnaise. It makes a nice, fresh tasting mayonnaise.
Nice.
So never throw anything out. So for the salad, I toss some lettuce, some rinsed and drained chickpeas, canned chickpeas, and walnuts together. And that recipe, the complete recipe and a photo, it's at dinnerinminutes.com. And please follow me on Twitter. That's at L. Gassenheimer. And on Twitter today, we have a picture of Cindy with her conch chowder.
Oh, great.
That was good. Very good.
Fred Tasker, what are we drinking?
Well, wine blends. I always like to say that wine is like music. In a barbershop quartet, a tenor sings the melody, and a countertenor sings above, and a baritone and bass sing below, and the whole turns out to be greater than the sum of its parts. Now, wine is just like that. If you take France's famous red Bordeaux wine, it's a blend of up to 5 grapes, and they all add something. Cabernet Sauvignon produces the tannin and structure, with Merlot for sweetness and smoothness, Cabernet Franc for floral aromas, Malbec for its inky violet color, and Petit Verdot for spice. And the sum really is the greater than the sum of the parts in that. Now, winemakers know that, and one of their favorite pastimes, they always tell me, is the slow winter months when the wines are aging in the barrels, and they sit around the pot-bellied stove in the wine cellar and dream up all the fancy new blends that they'd like to try. And they really do like to tinker. For example, in California's Livermore Valley, the Murrieta's Well Winery makes a white wine called the Whip. That's a blend of 7 grapes: Semillon, Chardonnay, Sauvignon Blanc, Orange Muscat, Viognier, Gewurztraminer, and White Riesling. And not surprisingly, when you have all those grapes in a wine, they have very complex aromas and flavors. And they tend to have lots of fruit. In fact, I like to recommend the Whip for Thanksgiving dinner because it has to measure to handle the flavors of so many different things: turkey, dressing, gravy, candied yams, green beans, casserole, and even cranberry sauce. Now, in red wines, California's Freelance Wine Winery makes a hearty wine called Coup de Grâce of Zinfandel, Petit Sirah, Petit Verdot, and Cabernet Franc. In fact, this wine has the opulent fruit and spice to go with a couple of the spicy Jamaican dishes I see on Cindy's menu at Ortenique. I saw the jerk chicken and the seafood ahi tuna with Caribbean spice. I think that would be a marvelous combination.
With the coup de grace.
Yeah, sounds great.
It's interesting that these wineries are taking names that you don't normally find with wine.
Right.
Yeah, they're called fantasy names. They said that's what they do when they sit around that pot-bellied stove. They dream up the
fantasy
blends,
names.
Dream up the names.
Was it because it's football season?
Probably, yeah. There are lots more of these blends, and you can check them out in my wine column this Saturday in the Miami Herald. In fact, you can buy it on newsstands everywhere and check out its colorful new design. And thanks for the plug.
You're welcome, Fred. Okay, great advice. Cindy, what's the biggest selling wine with all your wine, your dishes at Ortenique?
Well, Ortenique has great, great wine list. Ernesto Plagata is, partners with us. And in the new venture in Zest, we have a new the wine room is going to be gorgeous, with a glassed-in wine room and a private dining room next to that. A lot of outdoor seating in the promenade.
So this, you mentioned Zest Market, but this is different. This is next to the market. It's going to be a
fine dining.
Is it a white tablecloth kind of place?
Yes, it is. It's very, I don't know, it's organic. It's new. We're doing some really new, beautiful things. We have a oven, pizza oven, lots of nice tapas style bar bites coming out of there. And I don't know if you're familiar with the Southeast Financial Center, but it has a gorgeous courtyard. We'll have umbrellas, seating, plants.
And there's valet parking or something?
Yes.
It's hard to park around there.
Yes, there's valet parking. And if you wanted to just jump on the people mover, it's right there. It lets you out right there.
Okay. No, Cindy, I checked out your wine list at Ortonique, and it is really fabulous. It's very extensive.
Yes, it is. You know what? They're really great at coming in, all our vendors, and we pair up the food, and we really have a good time. You know, Ernesto's very, very good at putting that wine list together.
Okay, so but let's get back to your book. And you were mentioning to me that it's really user-friendly.
It is.
You give tips like don't cut your endive ahead of time. Why is that?
Well, it'll get all brown on the edges, and you have to use a sharp knife. A dull knife does the same thing and browns things. I also give you points of, well, you think, well, if it's got Caribbean recipes, where am I going to get it if I live in the Midwest? Well, that's not the case, because I teach you, instead of a pigtail, you can use a corned beef, you know, something that you can get locally.
You can use corned beef instead of cooking with a pigtail?
Yes, you can, and get a similar result. I'm not saying it's exact, but very similar.
I don't know where you get a pigtail here either.
Oh, I do, the Jamaican market on 160th.
Okay. Also, you have wonderful stories. Let's talk about this story with your daughter, Ashley.
Oh.
And that you told me it's okay that we can buy store-bought dough. Why is that?
Because we got in a big fight Thanksgiving. She made homemade dough. She was always the baker. She took up my oven space. I told her to go buy Pillsbury because she was making a mess. She ended up wadding up this big pile of homemade dough, and she threw it at me as I was walking away. It hit me in my back. And so no longer do I say make homemade dough.
Oh,
we need Pillsbury.
But as I read the story, you threw a little bit back.
Well, she claims that, and I claim the opposite.
How old is she?
Right now, she's 26.
Uh-huh. Okay.
And she's part of the restaurant.
Yes, yeah, she is. Yes. She's really, she did not want to be in the kitchen, although she cooks really well. She wants to be in the front of the house like her stepdad, Delius.
You know, I think I remember when she was born.
Probably.
Bonnie, it's not a good idea to.
Okay. All right.
You know, I mean.
Okay.
No, you knew her. You met her when she was about 4 or 5.
Yeah.
Anyway, Cindy, congratulations on the book.
Thank you.
It's a beautiful book and a lot of fun. And it's been a really, really tasty week here.
Well, thank you,
Cindy Hudson. Thank you so much for joining us, and for the delicious conch chowder
and for the delicious peanut butter poppers.
Chocolate.
Healthy. We're going
poppers.
Healthy.
I don't know how healthy it is if you eat more than one, but never mind.
I'm guilty.
Great. So the book is called From the Tip of My Tongue, Stories and Recipes from One of Florida's Favorite Chefs. Now, next week, we'll be talking with lure chef John Latrellis. There's going to be a seafood festival in Coconut Grove. He's going to tell us all about that.
Great.
So I'm Linda Gassenheimer. Join me then.
And we'll join you at Ortonique on the Mile.
Please. And then you got to come down to Zest as well.
And Zest. And that.
Oh, and we have to thank Fred.
Oh, and that, Fred, bye.
Bye, Fred.
Bye.
That wraps up today's program. Thanks for tuning in. Today's first segment was produced by Polly Landis. Richard Ives is our lead producer. Also, thanks for continuing to support public radio financially. You can go to our website to see how you can stave off a couple of on-air pledge days, because the more we raise before the drive begins on October 15th, guess what? The less we'll have to interrupt our normal programming. So you'll probably give anyway. Why not make it early and help out? The website is WLRN.org. You can also call us 1-866-247-9576. Our website, we also have free audio archives and downloads and more info, including our photos at the Topical Currents Facebook page. Of course, our online producer is Paul Leary, who also keeps up our Topical Currents Facebook page. Joe and I return Monday with another topical currents. We'll speak with the author of the book Bouncing Forward, Transforming Bad Breaks into Breakthroughs by Michaela Haas. It's Bonnie Berman for Joseph Cooper. Remember, we could end this pledge drive today. 1-866-247-9576. Stay tuned for Here and Now, up next from NPR News.